into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No, I'm...
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power,
fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Now, as welcome before, as mentioned before the ad break, rather, Sheffield United have taken a 1-0 lead against 10-man Newcastle. They've just scored a penalty. 76 minutes left on the clock. One of three games this evening in the Premier League. Wolves host Everton at 8:15. Burnley host Manchester United at 8:15. We can get team news from Turf Moor now from Peter Smith.
Two changes for each manager from their previous Premier League selections. For Burnley, Johan Berg-Gudmundsson and Eric Peters are restored, with Charlie Taylor out injured and Eric Peters dropping to the bench. For United, Edison Cavani is straight back in following his three-game ban. Nemanja Vidic wins a recall, with Fred and Scott McTominay amongst the United substitutes. At Turf Moor, it's Burnley against Manchester United.
Yeah, so it looks like something of a 4-3-3 for Manchester United. Shaw, Wan-Bissaka, Maguire and Eric Bailly is back in alongside Maguire. And then we'll have Matic and Pogba and Fernandez with Martial and Rashford either side of Edinson Cavani. And we'll see how things go. Pat Nevin, good evening.
How are you doing, old boy? Are you well?
I'm not so bad. By the way, as an aside, I wanted to just check this. Does the Scottish FA rumble from one crisis to another?
Only on days ending with a Y. yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know, is it the IFA you've got over there?
FAI,
yeah.
We are bad.
And I know it's kind of laughed at a lot as well. And every time I hear it, I think, should try the SFA, mate.
Right, okay. I'll take your word for it. I mean, the latest in our kind of sorry history is that Damien Duff has walked away from the Irish coaching ticket, enraged, it would seem, at an investigation launched last year into a quote-unquote anti-English video which Stephen Kenny played before a match at Wembley, which was somehow leaked and found its way into the UK version of the Daily Mail. And the FAI immediately launched an urgent investigation, which turned out to amount to nothing. Stephen Kenny talked about forces around not exactly helping the team. We thought it had drifted into nothing, and now, last couple of days, Damien Duff has left the coaching ticket ahead of World Cup qualification, and no real reasons publicly given as to why, but everything I've told you is what's in all the papers. FAI not saying very much. Oh, and of course, the taxpayer bailed them out earlier this year. They're completely bankrupt. So I'm just wondering, like, we're all just paying attention to our own associations, but I think ours beats yours.
What's your youth development like?
Oh, it's a disaster, and it's going to be a disaster for the next decade because we are bankrupt.
Right, okay. We haven't got one. So yours may be a disaster, but we just get rid of ours, right?
So. Oh, sorry, that's all we do. We ship them over to England. That's the plan.
Yeah, so, to be honest, it's kind of tough slightly. I mean, I'll take you years back, right? Something happened to me. I was a chief exec in Motherwell. And if you're a chief exec, you're basically on all the committees, of which I have limited knowledge of. But I was immediately seconded onto the Youth Development Committee. And the first thing I said, can I see the accounts? And they said, oh, yeah, eventually, yeah. And I said, I'd like to see them now. Second thing, could you tell me how the structure of the organisation works? You know, like most structures of most organisations, kind of pyramid or whatever, they all work up. That's what business management is like. They said, no, we couldn't get you that. And I said, well, why not? I said, well, it doesn't exist. I said, well, it must exist. Everyone must know who they kind of have to talk to. And no, it doesn't exist. It can't be done. I've never known an organisation, Facebook, you know, Google, they could give you a structure, you know, whatever kind of chart you want to use, but they couldn't do it. It was apparently impossible. And my first meeting, they used to get this monies in from UEFA for, you know, qualifications and all that sort of thing. They used to get a couple of million a year. And I said, well, where'd that money go? In youth development. And they went, well, we give 30,000 to them and 20,000 to them and 30,000. And nobody got any money right. And like, I was saying, well, what's that money going on? No idea. Mm-hmm. If they'd have saved it for 3 years, they could have got indoor facilities for the whole of Scotland in about 10 years. But they didn't, they frittered it away. And I followed one of the trails, and this is brilliant, to where the money was going at this small club who shall remain nameless. What they spent their youth team money on? A new bar for the chairman's office. So, trust me,
yeah,
it's everywhere.
It seems to be. So Manchester United then, we haven't spoken in a while. Their 2-0 defeat to Man City, both goals conceded through set pieces, even though that was a defeat and maybe just, you know, a slight reality check, they weren't outplayed to the extent, I would put it to you, that shatters their momentum in any great way.
No, I don't think they're over concerned about it. You don't like losing in a derby game, obviously, but City have on some pretty good form, and their display against Chelsea was their best I've seen this season. I thought they were absolutely magnificent in that game against Chelsea. But then they look as if they are now on their roll, and it's been waiting for a little while for that to happen. So I don't think United will get too over concerned about that. I think they're on a decent run just now, not losing a lot of games, not losing a lot of goals either. And they just look strong and powerful, and also with options. Lots of, you didn't have options before. You know, you just thought, well, who's going to do a job for us? And in actual fact, you look at it now and you think, yeah, pretty comfortable the way that looks just now. I think it looks good, probably slightly better than I thought it would be. But I never thought they were in a particularly bad position anyway. There was a lot of crisis management shouting going along. I kind of wasn't buying into that. I thought they were a decent team that, you know, just had to settle down in a weird season. And I think they have settled down. They look pretty good now.
Yeah. Their record against Burnley, especially at Turf Moor, is very, very good. So they've won their last four matches at Turf Moor. Burnley haven't even scored in the last five matches against United at Turf Moor, and they are 0-8 against United when it comes to wins. So all of that points towards this not being a massive banana skin. Burnley have only scored 9 league goals. Only Sheffield United have fewer. So like, everything is pointing towards United making fairly short work of this evening.
It's never easy against them. I mean, Sean Dyche organises them incredibly well, so it's always tough. But what Burnley are sometimes very good at, I mean, they're not just a long ball team. Oh, nearly scored a second goal there. Very close, Brewster. But they use their physique and their power. Actually, that's not really going to work that well against Manchester United, because they certainly have got plenty of physique and power. So you're going to have to try something else against them. So I just think, oddly enough, there's certain teams that Burnley can do a number on, or over the years have been set up to do a number on. I don't think they're particularly set up to do a number in the way Manchester United are, and the physical capacity that they've got. So you're right, anything can happen. Mm. You know that Dyche is quite capable, but is this one that looks like a banana skin? No, it doesn't at the moment. But, you know, hey, anyone who makes predictions this year is a fool. So I predict Nuno Bernard. That old one.
Cavani's back in this evening. He starts. He's got Martial and Rashford either side of him. I think he's made a big impression on Manchester United fans. The intelligence, the craft in the box, maybe something they were missing, especially against teams liable to pack the bus. And he has scored some big goals as well. Is Cavani, who Manny might have expected was just being bought as an elderly statesman, is he still looking of a calibre to you to be, you know, starting striker for United for this season at least?
Do you know the odd thing? Remember there was a period watching him, and I very fortunately was able to go over to Paris and watch him a few times with one of my other jobs and doing commentaries. And maybe it was just a flip, but every time I saw him, he missed so many chances. His conversion rate with good chances was absolutely useless.
Right.
And I kept on thinking, look, everyone talks about this guy, and I'm, yeah, he's good, but like, he's not that good. And there was another guy like that many years before, and everyone's kind of wiped this from the brain now, right? But there was a period that everybody used to say that about Zlatan, right? Mm. You know, he'd come and play against English teams and he would have a stinker every time, and everyone, we couldn't kind of get it. You kind of, there's some players you need to watch quite regularly, and I think Cavani's one of them. And what you're talking about there, the intelligence, the movement, the work ethic and the attitude that, you know, the Manchester United really needed. I think he shows it brilliantly. He's another one of those guys, when you see him week in, week out, he's just a far better player than you thought he was. Yeah. Remember somebody saying that to me, and you have to play with players sometimes to to understand really how good they are, and it's absolutely true to some degree. But watching them really regularly makes a difference. And to be fair, when you look at Ham and, you know, Thiago Silva as well, you just thought, well, I knew they were quite good. And then you watch them for a while and you think, actually, I understand why people called them world-class when they were at their best.
Yes, I think a lot of people are in that boat at the moment with Cavani. Like, even the goalie scored the last-minute header against Southampton at the end of November, where it's brilliant movement, and he almost, I think his movement dictates the ball in, and he finishes the header beautifully. I mean, there was, again, to use that same word, there was such craft about it that you don't really see from Rashford and Martial, who are just, you know, all raw ability and you know, kind of so many brilliant tools that you feel they're not maximising. But like that kind of movement is not some, Cavani's movement, that's not something United fans are seeing from other players in the same way.
Yeah, there's a direct, well, obviously, Rashford, there's an amazing directness, which is fabulous on its own, and Martial's got his own specific stuff. But oddly enough, I think Cavani's a footballer's footballer, you know, because, you know, and also a fan, so you think, actually, yeah, you're doing all the right things there. You're actually moving in the right ways. You aren't doing any stupid runs into daft places that don't make any sense. If you make a run, there's a good reason for it, and you can see why. I think he's one of those players that certainly Bruno Fernandes is going to love playing with him, you know, because he will make those moves, and he will love it, and they will have understandings without a shadow of a doubt. Mm. I mean, Bruno will do that sort of thing with, you know, a guy who just pins his ear back and goes. He will do that anyway. But a guy who makes intelligent movement like he does, I think you'll love playing with him. So that's something that another reason why you want to stick him up there. And the other thing is, he is quite selfless. You know, for a centre forward, yes, he'll score a decent amount of goals and a good amount of goals, but he will actually do the selfless work for the others probably won't do. And I think Ole probably looks at that and thinks, can that work? So that kind of rub off on others around him. And there's a kind of wee bit of me that's beginning to see that rubbing off on one or two others who are, you know, Martial's working a wee bit harder. He's never noted for being the hardest worker. But even Paul Pogba, saw him the other day, played a ball and made a move, you know, in space. Wow. And he hasn't been doing that for a while. So he's, as you say, he's starting tonight in that centre midfield with Matic. So it'll be interesting to see how they work together. And, you know, back to Burnley, with the physicality of that group, Burnley aren't going to out-muscle them.
Yeah, United's away form. They're the only unbeaten side in the Premier League away from home. But the foundation for it is very clear. They've scored 21 goals away from home, which is the best in the league. They haven't managed to keep a clean sheet yet. So Luke Shaw, Harry Maguire, Eric Bailly this time with Maguire, and Juan Bissaka. It still just feels like they're kind of not getting away with it, but it doesn't feel like championship winning back four. The Bailly Lindelof discussion has broken out, but even Kevin Doyle was on the show after the Man City game last week, Pat, and, you know, he came on after watching the game and he said, I watched that back four and they just play as individuals. He's like, I'd love a defensive coach to get in there and mould them somehow, because it still doesn't feel right or look right back there.
It's kind of okay. Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, I look more at the fullbacks, to be honest, because these days when you're looking at fullbacks, you're thinking, right, okay, what else are you going to give us? You know, we are all thinking, what else are you going to give us? And although Shaw, you know, the earlier part of his career, he was getting down the line much more and, you know, putting in fantastic crosses much more than he has just now. And I hold to this day, Wan-Bissaka is one of the worst crossers in the league. But the rest of his game's very good. So, again, it's okay. But when you're looking at Liverpool and when you're looking at Manchester City and others, I mean, they're getting people coming from those areas. And they're going to give you 10, 15, 20 goals a season from that area, just from, you know, really good quality balls in. Kind of not looking like you've seen almost as much as that from, you know, the Manchester United fullback. So that side of it is, maybe the manager wants them to be more, you know, static and central and, you know, keep a little bit tight, but you kind of expect a wee bit more because it is Manchester United, and Manchester United, you expect that sort of thing. So if they were flying up and they were losing a load of, you know, not a load of goals, but enough goals, you put up with it because they're giving you something else going that way. But I'm just not sure their fullbacks to the standard that others do are doing that. But you're right, it's always Maguire and AN other, or AN two or three others. And for all the stick Maguire has got at various points, he still is the one, isn't he? He's still the central one, and he'll continue to be so.
Yeah. I was absentmindedly watching Sky Sports News the other day. It was on mute. That's when you know you're not spending a morning very well, I think. Muted Sky Sports News. I think that's when it's time to go, So it just had all the various stats for the Premier League, you know, most goals, then it was most assists, then it was, you know, passing stats, then it was chances created. The only player who was in the top five in all of them was Bruno Fernandes. And he just jumped out a mile. Like, Harry Kane wasn't in the top goals. He was up there for top assists, such as Harry Kane these days. But Bruno Fernandes, since he joined United, they've scored 63 Premier League goals. He has scored 19 of them and he's had 14 assists. So basically more than half of the goals United have scored are down to Bruno. Look, we've talked at length about him, but I kind of was sitting there watching muted Sky Sports News and I was thinking, like, what is his outstanding quality? You know what I mean? Like, if you were a scout and you rang up and said, you've got to sign this guy, the first question would be, well, like, what is he? What is it that makes him so unmarkable, so outstanding, so brilliant?
There's lots of things he's very, very good at. Ooh, just missed another chance. He should be 3-0 up just now.
Sheffield United, yeah, still 1-0.
Yeah, still 1-0. Brewster again, who misses the chance. To be honest, again, as an ex-player, I look upon it as, I'm looking for something that you do that makes me really quite surprised, that you spotted it, you had the awareness to see it, you had the timing to do something that's different from everyone else. And that is it. It's not, you know, yes, he's good at free kicks. Yes, he's good at penalty kicks. Yes, he's good at, you know, he'll thread a pass, all that sort of stuff. But his timing of releasing passes is very weird. It's very different from most people because, you know, it never seems to, when the ball comes to him at pace, he never seems to stop, take it, slow it down, take a touch, play it the other direction. He manipulates his body to flick it around and he's off. Now, everyone else has taken another second or two to do that. He's done it and he's moved. Now, if you're a defender, you've put yourself in the position to stop what a normal player would do, because that's what they all do. So you put yourself there. He then does that, you're gone. You've lost it. You've half-followed the ball. He's gone the other way. And he does it as quickly as, well, he does it quicker than any player in the league. Right. And I kind of do think that's even more than De Bruyne.
Right.
But De Bruyne's got other skills that he hasn't got to that level. So I'm not saying he's better than Kevin De Bruyne by any manner of means. But in that one specific area of skill, I'm not sure I know that many that in the British game over the last few decades have had what he's specifically got. So if you're watching him and the balls are coming into him and you see him play a good ball, we all go, yeah, that was a good ball. Now, re-look at it and think, what would somebody else have done there? And they usually have taken a touch or turned around or not quite got it on target. He kind of swivels, pivots, and moves it and moves the other way before anyone else has considered it. And it doesn't look like one of the obvious things, but nobody else is doing it anywhere close to him. And it's creating massive amounts of space. And the big thing is, it does it in the last third. And that's the hardest place to do it because there's so little space. That's, for me, my favourite thing about him. And I was at a game when they played Everton a while back. And I was just honestly gasping at what he was doing time and again. I just thought, wow, how few players do I know have ever been able to do that to that level? So that for me is his thing.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll keep an eye out for that. It's an interesting way of looking at it. Before you go, two quick things. Can you tell Pat Nevin he was correct about Kieran Tierney? Phenomenal, says Gareth. Yeah. You can be smug about that one.
To be honest, wasn't difficult. I'd watched him for a long time. I just thought, I mean, and the odd thing is, and the abuse I took when I was saying, I love Robertson, but he's a better player than Robertson. And people are going, that's dreadful. And But it's not about stats. It's about footballer. And he's spectacular. I honestly think that if I had a choice to play a fullback in European football, I'd probably take him.
All right. And then before we go, I want to bring people team news. Wolves against Everton. Here's Alex Winter.
Two changes for Wolves in the FA Cup victory over Crystal Palace here on Friday. Rui Patricio is back in goal in place of John Ruddy, and Morgan Gibbs-White, recalled from his loan at Swansea last week, starts in place of Adama Traore. There's five changes for Everton from the side who got past Rotherham in the Cup. Pickford, Mina, Sigurdsson, Holgate and Okoro all return, but there's no obvious striker for the Toffees, with Dominic Calvert-Lewin, their leading goal scorer, injured. It's Wolves against Everton at Molineux.
Quick final word on this one, Pat. For Everton, they're in seventh, but really they're on the same number of points as Spurs and Man City and Southampton, so still having a very good season.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird one for Everton today. They're going 3-4-3 today, which is a real shock because they've actually got, you know, some strikers, particularly Tosin, who scored at the weekend on the bench. So it's a little bit of a surprise. They look really physical tonight, Everton. I mean, they look like the old dogs of war, Everton, tonight. And if you look at the forward line of Wolves, if you Gibbs White, beautiful player. Love him. Fabio Silva, 18, and will be a great player. And Neto. So there's not a lot of power up there. So I think old Carlo's decided, let's out-muscle them tonight.
He's a pragmatist as well, isn't he?
Oh, when he has to be.
All righty. So listen, we will talk on Monday evening, I suspect, Manchester United at Anfield Sunday, and the league will have taken a bit of shape then. So Pat and Evan, until then, thank you.
See you then. Take care.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Now then, you're very welcome along. So busy football show in store for you. Very shortly, we'll hear from David Myler. And then Daryl Horgan is going to join us later on in the show. Had been in Scotland with Hibs, has moved to Wickham now in the Championship. That was back in September. So we'll see how Daryl Horgan has settled in. Obviously, interesting times under Stephen Kenny as well. So we'll ask him a few questions I think we all have at the moment. That's on the way. Latest from Turf Moor. 4 minutes of added time. We're still in the first half here. It was an 8:15 kickoff. Burnley nil. Manchester United nil, and it's 1-1 at Molineux as well. Neves cancelled out, and a Iwobi opener. And if you weren't listening earlier on, Sheffield United 1-0 winners against 10-man Newcastle. So Sheffield United have gone from 2 points at the bottom of the table to 5 points, still very much at the bottom of the table there. 9 points from safety, and Brighton do have a game in hand. So it's still a very long road back for Sheffield United. But it's a start, if nothing else. Now, David Myler, good evening.
Good evening, Joe.
How you doing? I know you kept one eye at least on events at Turf Moor. There's a very strange kind of long pause in this game. I don't know if you caught it, where Kevin Friend, the referee, had a lot of work to do. Initially, he was deciding whether or not to give Robbie Brady a red card for a foul on Cavani, and then VAR intervened, and suddenly, 20 seconds earlier, Luke Shaw had got a smidgen of the ball, barely a smidgen, but then studs up on Goodmanson. And so that became the focus of the VAR team. In the end, Robbie Brady's yellow card was rescinded, never mind becoming a red card, and the foul was given against Luke Shaw, who was then given a yellow. I think I've summed that up. Anyway, that was the gist. What did you make of it? I didn't envy Kevin Friend there.
Yeah, I know. It's just when it comes to like this and you start going back, it's like, I don't even know what the ruling is, to be honest, Joe, how far they go back. Obviously, there was the case where Luke Shaw, is it a foul? And then obviously they break, and then Robbie brings down someone, and then it goes back. But look, I think Luke's was yellow card. I don't think it's a red card. But at the same time, it's just one of those with VARs, how far do you go back? When I think it was at the earliest part of the season, if you remember, there was a game with Chelsea, and it showed an offside in the lead-up. But the goal came about 10 passes after. Sorry, it was like, how far do you actually go back to look at these things? But it's a tough one with these with VAR.
Mm. And then did you see Harry Maguire had a goal disallowed, a header. There was maybe a touch of left forearm on the shoulder of opposition player. I thought it looked okay.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a legitimate goal. Obviously, Harry's, what is he, 6'3"? He's not exactly small. When he gets up, he's going to be powerful. And look, if you ever look at, say, goal kicks going down the pitch, centre-halves are always jumping, leaning with their arm to get that extra kind of step on the shoulder of the opponent. So I don't really see any problem with it. Can you imagine if the Burnley centre-half, whether it be me or Tarkowski, did it to Maguire, he wouldn't probably have too much of an argument. So it does happen all the time. I think the goal should have stood, to be fair.
Mm. It's just gone half-time. General thoughts on the game, on United obviously looking to go top, and maybe how's Robbie Brady looking as well?
No, do you know what? Actually, not like my wife is massively into football, but obviously she knows I play with Robbie and I'm friendly with Robbie. She asked, how's he getting on? I think Robbie's done really well the past few weeks. He's finally hitting some form. Obviously, Robbie was very unlucky with the injuries he's had, and he probably needed a run of games to get back to certainly the levels we know Robbie can get to. And I certainly think at the moment, with Sean Dyche playing him regularly, we're starting to see that he's had, you know, various assists, you know, in games. And I think he's looked bright. Of course, look, when you're playing against Manchester United, it's always going to be a tough game. There's no doubt in that. The game's kind of been almost a game of chess. You know, Burnley will always be defensively solid. They're very hard to break down. They're very organised. United, at times, are probably playing in front of Burnley's back four with you know, with the way like Cavani's coming short, then Rashford and Martial are coming in off the wings, and they're almost playing into the hands of the Burnley defenders. You, if you were a Manchester United fan, you'd want to see probably runs in behind, first time balls. You know, look, they've got Bruno, who's one of the best in the world, at that little flick pass around the corner, try and get in behind the defence, because they need to stretch it, because at the moment it's just all in front of Burnley.
Well, there are a few things I want to talk to you about, but first we'll get the halftime reports. So firstly, from Turf Moor, Peter Smith watching Burnley against Manchester United.
Burnley 0, Manchester United 0. VAR played a major part in the first half. Referee Kevin Friend had lots to ponder, overruling a potential Brady red card and United free kick, to go back to an incident that occurred 20 seconds earlier, with United's Shaw ultimately booked. Maguire had a towering header ruled out for supposedly impeding Peters in mid-air. Martial's been lively with three attempts on goal, and Wood had a shot for Burnley blocked by Baye for a corner. Half-time, Burnley 0, Manchester United 0.
Next to Molyneux then, Alex Winter is there.
It's Wolves 1, Everton 1 at the break. A very early lead for the Toffees. Lovely move involving Rodriguez and Dina, and a lovely first time finish from Iwobi. But Wolves striking back only 8 minutes later, with Ait Nouri driving to the byline, clipping towards the far post, and there was Neves to slide home with a right foot. Since then, chances from Wolves through Silva, drawing a really good low save out of Pickford. And then late in the half, a chance for Dendonka at the top of the penalty area, but skewed his shot horribly wide. No trouble for Pickford there, but down the other end, it was Iwobi with his second chance of the game for Everton. Neat 1-2 with Rodriguez. Good chance from probably 10 yards out on the angle from the right-hand side, but it was a weak effort, and Patricio got down to keep it out very comfortably. Good game here, and level. Wolves 1, Everton 1.
So there we are. 1-1 Wolves, Everton, and 0-0 between Burnley and Manchester United. If you're just tuning in, we have David Myler with us. A few things I want to throw your way. Here's an interesting left field one. I was on the BBC website. Mika Richards had a column, and he was talking about one of his favourite people in the world. He calls him one of the most inspirational people that I've ever met. And he was talking about, and the question is going to be to you, which teammate jumps to your mind? He was talking about James Milner. It was effectively a love letter to James Milner, one of the most inspirational people I've ever met. Talked about how invaluable he was as a teammate, as a presence, as a person, how approachable he was, how he would ring the phone if you were in trouble at midnight. Just all round class act. The kind of stuff, I suppose, that statistics will find very, very difficult forevermore to measure. How do you measure something like that? And Milner comes across brilliantly in it. So, throwing it at you, you've had no prep time to think about this, a left field kind of question. If I had to ask you for an inspirational teammate to take Mika Richards' word, would anybody jump to mind?
Two. Seamus Coleman and Jordan Henderson. I wouldn't like to pick between the two of them. I've played with Seamus since I was under 21 with Ireland. Obviously before my injuries, then I got called into the squad, the Irish squad, before my injuries, and then Seamus was in. He was kind of well established into the team before I got, you know, called in 2012. But I've just always, even as I sit here now talking to you, I was speaking to Seamus this afternoon. And of course, then at Sunderland, when I first arrived, Jordan was there. Jordan had a knock, and my registration had gone through, so I couldn't play in a game. We were playing Hartlepool with the reserve team, and I ended up sitting next to him for 90 minutes, got chatting to him, and we've been close friends ever since. Those two, the way, probably the biggest compliment that I could give them, because I have a young daughter, I would like, when she's older, her to bring home a man like one of those two. They're just terrific role models in the way they conduct themselves on the pitch, off the pitch, the way they are as husbands, fathers, everything about them is just top notch. And as even if you speak about Mika there, like, I've come across James Milner a few times, a terrific pro. Even there was a small thing, I saw Troy Deeney talking the other day about what's his name, Kieran Tierney. And he said, everyone said he's like James Milner in his approach and the way he conducts himself. So that just speaks volumes of those people we mentioned there. Phenomenal people. And I think the best way to describe someone is, like, as a friend, is when it's going good, you know, they'll be there. But when things aren't going great for you, where are they then? And those are the big moments. And I know Seamus has been there for me, and I know Jordan's been there. So they'd be the two that would stand out for me.
Right. I'm not as familiar with Henderson. I mean, of course, I'm pretty familiar with him. But even you think of Coleman, since he burst onto the scene as an Everton player and everything he's done with Ireland, and even, you know, the frustration, I'm sure, of being left out at Euro 2012, I can't, you know, all the way back to then to now, I can't think of him ever putting a foot wrong publicly. You know what I mean? Like, he's grown up under the spotlight, and I don't think he's ever put even a foot wrong once.
But I think that a lot of that comes down to his upbringing, with his mother and father, his two brothers, his wife Rachel. I think they've been going out since they were about 13, 14. Right. Seamus, a year older than me. Rachel's the same age as me. So that will tell you how long they've been together. It's the whole package, like, of the young lad from Donegal, you know, on Killybegs, the small village, you know, achieves his dreams, goes to England, becomes a professional footballer, goes on to, you know, play in the Premier League for a number of years, captains his country, you know, and then you've got the childhood sweetheart, just comes on the journey with you, and it's just remarkable, really. But a lot of it will come down to his upbringing and the way his family are.
Do you think clubs, when they're dipping into the transfer market, pay enough heed to the character of a Coleman, a Milner, a Henderson?
I would say certain clubs don't. There's been times, even in my playing days, when I played with Hull, we've signed fellas, no doubting that they were very good footballers. But then you really start to question the characters. Like, the example I probably use would be Hatem Ben Arfa, one of the most naturally gifted players I ever played with. But he would turn up late in the Monday morning, would come out with his, like, laces untied. He wouldn't, if we were doing, say, a short warm-up of, you know, some quick feet or whatever, Hatem would walk through it. He'd toss training off. It was just kind of one of those. That was his mentality. That was his way.
Did he deliver on the pitch?
Not enough. We certainly didn't get the performances he put in for Newcastle. That was the problem. But then I know it's probably not the best example to use at this moment in time, but I know Chris Wilder is very big on it with Sheffield United. There's no doubting that the players they go after are good players, but it's more a case for him, right? Who does this fella knock about with? What's his family like? What's his upbringing like? You know, it's kind of, if you look at his squad, they all seem like top lads. It's kind of a changing room that you'd want to be in it. And I actually, before the game tonight, I said if they win, I reckon they'll stay up, you know. That's a big statement, even as just as I was waiting for you there when you were doing the roundup there, like to say, like, that they're still
gone,
a good 9 points off with Brighton, you know, with a game in hand. I don't know what it is. Me and my dad laugh and joke, but I back the man, you know, and I just have a feeling Chris Wilder will somehow rejuvenate them now. Obviously, they had the win in the FA Cup, and now they've won tonight. I can just see them getting a bit of momentum and getting themselves out of it.
Yeah. You know, a Ben Arfa type, not to make it necessarily about him. So that attitude to punctuality and going through the warm-up and the details, you know, during the week.
Yeah.
Is that okay, or even, you know, even better than okay, if he's really delivering on the pitch on a Saturday, or is that always just a toxic thing?
If you're delivering, you'll get the benefit of the doubt the majority of the time.
But I suspect you still don't really like it.
Yeah, I don't. But, like, I look at, you know, in 2015-16 season, we had a striker, Uruguayan, Abel Hernandez. And Abel would be late some days. I used to be in control of the fines. I used to collect all the money. I fined people. And it would be kind of basically the money went towards, like, say, a Christmas party or a meal for the lads or whatever. There was just kind of always something. If we were doing an activity or something, it was kind of always, the fine money was the money used. But Steve Bruce had a big thing about hats and earrings. But Abel, he knew full well that you weren't allowed to wear earrings, but he constantly wore them. And it was like a £50 fine every time. But then Abel was like, okay, if I score on the weekend and I score the winning goal, you not fine me and all this. Like, I'd be like, oh. And then he'd go to the manager and the manager would say, yeah, fine. Abel ended up with like 22, 23 goals that season. We got promoted. And it was just kind of like, he would come in then after, you know, and everyone would be like, you know, obviously the mood would be through the roof because we've won, but Abel would kind of go, hey, no fine money for me. Do you know what I mean? And then he would just, like, on his earrings in the middle of the change room and off he'd go. But there are certain fellas who will get, you know, the rub of the green and the benefit of the doubt. It's just, if you're producing, lads are more than likely to leave it kind of brush off, like.
So, the Damien Duff situation. This guy, Dan McDonald was on last night. He got a huge response from listeners. And we just detected a degree of frustration. I think frustration at the loss of iconic Irish player who's now a highly regarded coach, just the kind of figure you want around the team. There's frustration that it all seems to have been so avoidable. Frustration that Stephen Kenny has had to talk about dark forces around the team. And probably a bit of frustration as well at the silence that we know nothing from the FAI, nothing from Duff himself yet. It's kind of all down to journalists doing a bit of digging here and there. And you're just kind of scratching your head saying we're 3 months away from World Cup qualifiers. And yeah, frustration is the word. What's your reaction to it all?
Obviously, I'm disappointed. I don't know Damien too well. If I saw him, I'd say hello to him. I'm not close friends with him or anything like that. By all accounts, when I started my B license, I believe he just completed his A license, and all the tutors and whatever were raving about Damien's work, how phenomenal he had grown as a coach. I know he did a lot of work with the Shamrock Rovers 15s or whatever. So obviously, it's a huge disappointment for Irish football that he has, for whatever reason, decided to step away. The way I look at it is it almost feels to me as if something else has come up on the horizon that, like, if you look at it, he's obviously playing, or he's under Stephen, that maybe there's an opportunity now to go and be a number one, and he feels the time is ready for him. I can't imagine there's too much problems inside the FAI or anything like that. I just imagine he's going to go and look for that next step. Maybe he feels he's ready. There could be a lot of talk of Celtic. He made a huge impression there. Obviously, working under Neil Lennon, they might look at getting him in, as the first team manager if it doesn't work out for Neil Lennon.
Right, okay. Well, then suddenly it makes total sense and there's no problem.
Yeah, that's the thing, Joe. I don't know. As you said, there's a lot of journalists doing digging. Everybody's been quiet about it. Look, I imagine if you were to ring enough people, or if I was to ring enough people, we could probably find out what was going on or what's wrong. But that's not really my place to do. I'm not a journalist.
No. Well, the ones who have reported on it, Dan was on last night, David Snaid, very reliable fellas, really good contacts. And it does seem that he was peeved, and properly peeved, about the investigation into the Wembley video, which I think we're all sick of talking about now and thought it was well behind us. But he was genuinely not happy about that, seems to be the reporting. He had a sit down with Gary Owens and gave it to him both barrels, is also the reporting. And why there's been a time lag, I don't know. Maybe Stephen Kenny or whoever said, look, take Christmas, chill out, forget about it, it'll be a new year, we'll put it behind us. And maybe he thought about it over Christmas and thought, sod them, I'm not over it, I'm sick of the way the whole thing was handled. Or maybe, Stephen Kenny talking about people working against the team, maybe Duff doesn't feel that situation has been rectified properly. And I'm getting deep into speculation here, which is tricky for you. But, if it's more that than him feeling there's a potential of a bigger job pretty soon around the corner. If it's more that ugly side of stuff, then it's like, you're kind of livid as an Irish fan looking on.
Yeah, of course. Look, like I said, Damien as a coach, look, we know how good of a player he was, but by all accounts, he's a fantastic coach. Mm. So you'd want him in around the team. And obviously someone of his experience, 100 caps, like he's the knowledge he has, everything, you'd want him in around the squad. I'd like to think that he's not, what you're talking about, being annoyed and peed off by what's gone on. I hope to God it's not that kind of stuff, because surely that's resolvable by getting a few. Of course, look, you almost forget COVID's there. I was going to say, if you get a couple of people in the room, surely the issue could be solved. If you could get a few people on a Zoom call, there's no doubt this thing could be resolved. Mm. Because, as you said there, the timing of it is very strange. So in my mind, look, I don't know. I think there's a bigger picture for him. He's looking at a bigger picture, that he's going to go into, the manager's job somewhere. Maybe he has something lined up, or I don't know. Yeah. It's just the timing, as you said there. Yeah, of course. Look, maybe Stephen said to him, take Christmas, have a think over everything. I imagine Damien's a strong-minded person. I think once he's his mind made up, it's made up. So who knows? It could have come before and he said, take Christmas to think about it. And then after it's come, he said, look, I've not changed my mind. This is what I feel. This is what I think. Mm. But I imagine we'll find out in due course.
I'm sure we will. Yeah. Based on your experience of being a player, if we move away from the specifics of what's happened here with Duff, because we're just going around in circles, obviously. But based on your experience, you've been there, you've been in camp, and there's been generally Martin O'Neill, Roy Keane. At the moment, we've Stephen Kenny and Keith Andrews and Damien Duff. Like, is there enough work to go around there?
No, definitely. Like you, as much as you say, you know, you admire Roy, but you also have, you know, Steve Walford, Steve Guppy.
Yeah.
I know Seamus McDonald with the goalies, but like there is always two, three coaches.
And you do need that.
Oh, I do. I definitely think Damien would definitely bring something different than Keith, and Keith would bring something different than Damien. There's no doubting that. Even if, you know, Stephen was, you know, there's been names thrown around of Lee Carsley, John O'Shea to come in. John would bring something different, as with, you know, Lee Carsley. But there's definitely enough work to go around, you know, for all of them. So I wouldn't see that as an issue.
Mm. How important did you feel the coaches were in your playing career, Ireland and club? Obviously, whenever you're asked about your career, I suspect you're asked about the manager. Was that manager good? Was that manager good? It's probably rare someone goes, who was the best coach you worked under, you know?
Yeah. Well, do you know what, right? A lot of the times managers don't do the training. A lot of time it is the coach. Like Marco Silva, I played under at Hull. Marco did everything himself. He had an assistant, Joe, who kind of, it was almost the teacher and the student, or the master and the apprentice. He would watch over everything Marco was doing, and he would just jot down little notes, and it was little, he used to give him little bits, but he was kind of like his eyes in the back of his head to see everything. But Marco had full control. Whereas like with Steve Bruce, we'd Mick Phelan, we'd Steve Agnew, and they took predominantly all the sessions. Of course, look, Steve Bruce had Steve Clements, Keith Burchin as well. So there was a few of them taking different parts. But a lot of the time, managers don't do the sessions. Mm. I could probably, I'd say, I've worked under Steve Bruce for probably 7-8 seasons. I'd say he's only taken about 30-40 sessions. But at the same time, he's still on the sideline watching over it all, monitoring it. And he's not too quick like to step in, go, hold on a minute, like this needs to liven up, or one of those, you know. But a lot of the times the coaches, that's what they're there for.
Yeah.
Like if you imagine, even as we're talking about United and Burnley playing tonight, like you could imagine that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is not doing all the sessions. It'll probably be Michael Carrick and someone else who are, you know, doing predominantly most of the work. It's only Ole will come in with his little, you know, crossing the T's and dotting the I's, should I say, and add his little fine tune to it. But at the end of the day, he's the one picking the team. So that's where you kind of heavily rely on your backroom staff.
Yeah. And, you know, Solskjaer would have worked obviously under the Ferguson model, which was Ferguson, again, standing back, and it's Steve McLaren for a time, and it's Carlos Queiroz for a time. Like even Ferguson, you know, that seemed to be his way of keeping things fresh.
Yeah, well, that was the best one I could give you was when we were promoted in the 16 season, just after the Euros, Steve Bruce obviously decided to step away from Hull. But Mick Phelan had been his number two for the whole time. I don't know if you remember, but it was a big ongoing thing. Was he going to get the job? Was he not going to get the job? And Mick actually took us. And honestly, what we did in that 3-4 weeks was incredible. Mick stayed as an assistant manager. He didn't try and become a manager.
Mm.
The training sessions were the same. He did everything himself. It was just, it was almost as if Steve Bruce had gone on holidays and, you know, Mick had just continued doing what we were doing. And that was great. Then Mick got the job and it suddenly, you know, changed. He brought an assistant who started taking the train sessions. The train sessions weren't as good. Mm. Like I believe now, if I rack my brain, we played Leicester the opening game of the season and they just won the Premier League. We beat them 2-0. Then we went away to Swansea. Oh, we beat them 2-1. Then we went away to Swansea. We beat Swansea 2-0. We lost to Manchester United. I remember Rashford scored in the last minute. And then we went away to Burnley and we drew 1-1, but we should have won the game. But we had started on fire. I think we had 7 points in 4 games. We were top of the Premier League. We were thinking like, oh, this is great. And then it was about a week after, like after those performances, Mick got the job. And then he brought in Neil McDonald, his assistant, and then things started to change, but it wasn't Mick's touch and Mick's feel. You could feel that experience and growth he had as a number two to Sir Alex and what he'd learned over the years. But then when he kind of stepped into the manager's role, like actually took it on, it just became, it fell by the wayside. And then I think we lost 8 in a row and it just went sour. And then look, lo and behold, we ended up relegated.
See, that's fascinating, because then Mick Phelan falls into this category, fair or otherwise, of, well, he's a great number two, but he's not quite a manager. And, you know, there's how many different, number two / managers have had that thrown at them. So, I mean, you would think if Phelan is in a place where he could be that good a number two, that somehow he'd be able to keep the wheels on the road as manager. It's amazing, really, that there is that subtle difference.
Yeah, of course. And look, but I think when you're number two, you just worry about the players and what's on the pitch. Mm. When you're the manager, you have to worry about the board expectations and all that stuff. And you're dealing with outside noises rather than just what's going on in the, you know, the training pitch on a Monday to Friday, preparing for the Saturday or Sunday, whichever day it is. I think that's when it becomes a problem. That then, can you deal with all the rest of it plus deal with what's going on? And it is a bit harsh for me to say that, it didn't work out for him as a manager. It's there, the facts are there. But there was no doubt he was an unbelievable coach. Mm. Like, sessions were fresh. You know, our ideas were great. Like, all the tactical work we did, we knew to a T what we were doing. But then comes the other stuff. Obviously, he brought in, like I said, Neil McDonald, and it wasn't the same.
Well, I guess that isn't that one of the things when a brilliant number two, on the basis of their work as a brilliant number two, becomes manager, they've lost their brilliant number two that the manager was relying on.
Yeah, of course, because you're looking for yourself, but you are yourself, so you can't help.
And it's not possible to do it all, is it not? It's too much.
Well, Marco Silva did it. Look, there'll be enough people watching this will say it didn't work out for him at Watford and Everton. And I remember when Marco was leaked, Seamus rang me and said, "Oh, what's he like?" And we were blown away by Marco when he came in. All these fresh ideas and, you know, his hunger for it all. I thought he was brilliant. If he'd probably come a few months earlier, we'd have probably stayed up. But at the same time, as you said, when a number two steps into number one, it is very difficult and it's very hard to do everything yourself because you have so much going on. Yeah. To be dealing with owners, you know, sponsorships, all this stuff, like the manager oversees it. And that was one of the beauties of Steve Bruce. He had, you know, a great backroom team, but he could deal with all the rest of it.
Mm. And not get stressed out by it, not get overwhelmed by it, and just keep it all at bay, kind of a thing.
Yeah, he could deal with it. That was the big thing. And then, look, I know Newcastle lost tonight. But like, even so, there's been a lot of, you know, problems with, say, Mike Ashley, the owners, they want to sell the club, you know, there's all this stuff. But me looking on from the outside, knowing him, he's certainly the one that would be able to deal with, you know, Mike Ashley. I imagine they're mates, you know what I mean, beforehand. But he'll be the one who'd be able to, you know, deal with them, talk to him and kind of say, look, we got this wrong, we're getting this right, we're doing that. Because he has experience in it and he knows what he's doing. Yeah. Look, if you speak to anyone who knows him or, you know, has played under him or played with them, they all speak highly of him.
Mm. Yeah, I guess you've got to manage upwards as much as manage the players as a part of it. Mm. You do get the impression from him. He can do that. He gets that side of the game. Before you go, Anfield on Sunday. So, I mean, well, as things stand, United will go top, but it's 2 points drop. Now they have, 54 minutes. So they have 35 minutes to get a goal here. So we'll have to see how that plays out. They're also playing each other in the FA Cup, obviously a week apart. Kind of a strange thing to say, given that Champions League games are often two-legged affairs, but I always get the impression players don't particularly like having games against the same opposition back-to-back like that.
No. Like, I think if whoever you are, if you're intrigued to Manchester United or Liverpool, this is what it's all about. Look, of course, Liverpool will want to win the league. Manchester United will think they have a chance to win the league. And then, like, it's the biggest rivalry in English football. So, you know, for them to be drawn in the fourth round, look, you'd want it in the later stages for the bigger occasion. But at the same time, look, the mindset of the United will change after tonight's result. Mm. Like you said, there's 35 minutes left. If they go top of the table, they'll be happy to play Liverpool and think, all right, we can take a draw. Liverpool need to beat us. Mm. Whereas if, you know, finishes up as a draw or if Burnley nick one, then it changes. So depending on that result, but then the FA Cup is obviously a straight knockout. So that'll be a different one. And you can imagine, I imagine that both teams will be the exact same for both games. I don't think, you know, the manager would want to lose to their rivalry, you know, their rival team. Of course, look, United fans, City and then Liverpool with Everton, but there's no doubting that Liverpool United's the bigger game. It's the one that all the fans are looking forward to. And I can't wait for the both of them. I just hope Liverpool win them both.
Jurgen Klopp was saying there's a chance, and it's only a chance, that Matip might be back. He said he's very close. It'll be a couple of days either way if he makes it or doesn't. So, like, last time we saw Liverpool in a serious game, it was Fabinho, who's been sort of the mainstay at centre-back, and Henderson. You hate to, Henderson back there didn't feel good. Watching lose in midfield from a tempo point of view and an authority point of view, I'm not sure that's worth it. That's robbing a lot from Paul to pay Peter, or whatever the phrase is.
Yeah, no, definitely. As much as Jordan's a fantastic midfielder, he's not a good centre half. Like if you're in possession and you know you're playing one of the weak sides or the weaker sides, they'll drop right back. But against Manchester United, no. I would rather one of the young fellas. But and I said this with Gerard and the boys on Monday morning after one of the weekend games. I just said, you miss a lot from him in midfield, you know, that high intensity, that pressure, that leadership, those qualities that he brings to the team. Just the kind of, you hear him. The beautiful thing now is that without the fans, we kind of hear, you know, players more, and you hear him barking orders, instructions, getting fellas going. And that is missed.
Yeah.
And look, we're also at the point where Liverpool are in a very sticky patch. Of course, look, they ended up demolishing, you know, Aston Villa's under-18s in the second half. But at the same time, the results in the league haven't been good enough. Mind you, it's only three games. The position they find themselves in isn't that bad. And a lot of people are kind of focusing on Liverpool United. And it's almost, you know, Manchester City are just in the background creeping. I think Guardiola will like that. I feel they're still the team. I think City are still the team, because if you think about it, they had an abysmal start and now they're slowly coming, and they've got games in hand. If they win them, they leapfrog right up the table. So
they play tomorrow against Brighton, and then they play Crystal Palace on Sunday after the United Liverpool game. And like, clearly nobody's even given that a second thought, City Palace on Sunday evening. But like, they're 4 points behind Liverpool, two games in hand, so they can leapfrog Liverpool by Sunday night, and they're 4 points behind United before tonight, with one game in hand. So like, if United drop points, like, we could be, for all the United Liverpool talk, you could be on with the lads Monday morning and City will be top of the league suddenly.
And that's the thing is, Liverpool fans are obviously saying, we'll beat United. United are saying, you know, 21 is coming, all that. And then City are just kind of going about their business. Like I said, they didn't start great, but they're slowly starting to put in performances. Kevin De Bruyne is starting to hit, you know, his peak performances again. So as you said, it is interesting, and they have favourable games in their hand where you're kind of looking at it, that should be a City win, that should be a City win. And then all of a sudden, they're top of the table. And of course, look, at the start of the year, I was asked, would I think Liverpool win the Premier League again? I said, I don't think they will. I think they'll finish second. I think City will win it. And I still think City are a team to beat. I think there's a lot more to come from them.
Okay. Well, listen, we'll know a lot more on Monday morning. David Myler, always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Cheers, Joe. Thank you.
David Myler with us there. Still nil all at Turf Moor. Burnley nil, Manchester nil, 59 minutes on the clock. Let's check in on Molineux. Alex Winter's there.
It's Wolves 1, Everton 1, the most disjointed start to this second period, largely because of extended treatment to Pedro Neto. He went down under a challenge from Decore, who was rightly booked as Neto was sprinting towards the Everton goal, but nothing came of the resulting free kick, and nothing's really come of the football so far in this period. Wolves marginally with more possession, but doing little with it, and the sides sort of sounding each other out, really. And it's there for the take in this game, but it's Wolves 1, Everton 1.
Half an hour to go in both of those games. Daryl Horgan is with us next.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
Now, you're welcome back. So, latest from the Premier League. It's still nil all between Burnley and Manchester United. Robbie Brady has just been taken off. He has 65 minutes played under his belt. David Myler was with us earlier on, if you didn't catch him. Reckons Brady's in good bit of form at the moment, getting some game time, and he walks off with Burnley nil, Manchester United nil. Elsewhere, we have Wolves against Everton, this game at Molineux, being watched for us by Alex Winter.
It's Wolves 1, Everton 1, a most disjointed start to this second period, largely because of extended treatment to Pedro Neto. He went down under a challenge from Decore, who was rightly booked as Neto was sprinting towards the Everton goal, but nothing came of the resulting free kick, and nothing's really come of the football so far in this period. Wolves marginally with more possession, but doing little with it, and the sides sort of sounding each other out, really. And it's there for the take in this game, but it's Wolves 1, Everton 1.
There we are. Earlier on today, Sheffield United beat Newcastle by goal to nil. So they've gone from 2 points to 5 points, which is something. Now, hoping Daryl Horgan of Ireland, and now Wickham, of course, these days, is with us. Hiya, Daryl. Can you hear us?
How are you doing? Yeah.
Good man.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Great to have you with us. I know there were a few issues, but spot on. So how is the form? I mean, you moved to Wickham September territory. I things seemed to be going pretty okay at Hibs. You had a three-year deal. You'd had that big moment in the derby in 19 when you scored both goals, their first Edinburgh derby in 6 years win. You played 28 games last season. Were you looking for a move? Were you not playing enough? What was the thought process behind it?
No, to be honest, I wasn't. I was kind of, at a year left, I had kind of set, we're going to see it out. We're going to see how it goes and maybe see if there's another contract at the end of it. The family was quite settled, kind of came out of nowhere. You know, something that's kind of out of the blue, really, jumped in, and it was a good option, and it was something that I wanted to do, as another crack at the championship. And you know, I'd obviously I kind of followed Wickham's rise through, and I'd kind of heard about what the manager had done and things like that. So it was a very interesting thing for me at the time, and I was not looking to move, but when it came up, I was happy to give it a right go.
Life of a footballer, I guess. You never know what's around the corner, and it's open Google Maps, and what do we think, and what do you think, and off we go. You probably don't have much time to think it through in some ways. Is it like offer comes in or interest comes in, and, you know, how long before you're kind of making up your mind, yeah, let's do it?
Yeah, it pretty much is. Like the missus was set to go to university. She, you know, all that went straight on hold for her, which is a nightmare, but you know, she was happy enough to do it for me as well. Like, so there was a lot of things that had to change very, very quickly. Mm. You know, so it was crazy, but I think a bid came in. I think it was Friday. I was left out of the squad for Hibs Saturday, down on a medical Tuesday, and I drove down the next day.
Wow.
We had a game against Brentford on Sunday, I think, Sunday morning. And that was kind of it, and went from there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice to meet you as you're walking out onto the pitch together.
Yeah, getting people's names still in the first game.
I can imagine.
Trying to get everyone's nicknames and proper names and things like that. It was a bit awkward, but it was grand.
And how are you doing now? Settled in, enjoying it?
Yeah, loving it. You know, obviously we had quite a rocky start, kind of new to the championship. We didn't pick up any points, but you know, ever since we've been very, very competitive. Mm. Probably should have more points than we do have, but doing quite well, and you know, looking forward to kind of this year and kind of the back end of the season and really kicking on.
Good. Well, best of luck with it. The international front, meanwhile, has been interesting, to say the least. I mean, what a mad year. It seemed like very few squads could have been as affected by COVID as you lot. It was just crazy week to week and day to day. I suspect Stephen Kenny had a headache. Your reaction to the Damien Duff news last couple of days?
Surprised. You know, in the setup, he was very good. It was disappointing because he was great on the place, but I suppose I don't know the ins and outs of it. If he wants to go into club or management or who knows, I'm not really sure of the ins and outs of it. But you know, it's disappointing. He was great on the place, and he's a very, very good coach.
Yeah. Some of the reporting. Look, I can ask these questions. If you can't shed any light on it, that's totally fine and understandable. Some of the reporting suggests he wasn't best pleased with how the investigation into the video shown to the players before Wembley was handled. Now, he hasn't confirmed that. That's just in the papers. But that's in the ether over here, as you may have heard from friends or family. What was in that video? Were you surprised at how that ended up in the Daily Mail in the UK, the fallout from that? What was your perspective on all that week, Daryl?
Yeah, I was kind of shocked when that came of it. I didn't see much in it, to be honest with you. You know, I don't remember most of it. I remember there was Ray Houghton's header, you know, there was bits and pieces, nothing major. Like, it was a massive game. It's Ireland v England. Yeah. The manager thought it would get us going.
Was there anything political in it that you thought, oh, this is strange?
No, nothing really. Nothing at all. To be honest, don't even really remember it. Nothing kind of stuck out to me going, Jesus, this is a bit much like, or anything like that. I didn't think there was anything in it.
Yeah.
I was very surprised when it came out that there was a problem, because I hadn't really heard anything about it.
Yeah. And there must be, Stephen Kenny gave that impression, I sense that somebody doesn't have the best interest of the team at heart, was kind of the phrase he used, if that is ending up being leaked to the papers. Alan Kelly was furious when it was suggested it was him, and he absolutely came out and denied that. But as players, you must have been looking around saying, how has this got into the papers, I presume?
Yeah. It's very easy for anything to get into papers and things like that, you know. I don't know how it got in there. I don't know why it got in there. But that's the nature of football as it is now.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of different agendas, lots of different things going on. It was a strange time, but I'm glad it was kind of parked so quickly as well.
Yeah. I'm not asking you to name names. Would you and the players know who leaked it to the papers?
I'd have no idea.
Right.
Not a clue.
And was it discussed among the group saying, how has this got out, lads? What's going on here?
I didn't hear about it. I was back in Wickham.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it just kind of cropped up. Maybe I'm not on social media or anything, so okay. I don't see anything.
But, right. Because it was in the papers even before or after kickoff. Like, it really wasn't long at all, you know?
I didn't know that, no. I only saw it really when I came back. I was in the gaff in Wickham, and it was on Sky Sports.
Right. Okay. Sorry. I may have that slight. I may be misremembering. I think it was like a week on, maybe the guts of a week on. It's hard to get the timelines, but it was. It was out there anyway. And when you saw, did you see Stephen Kenny's comment about feeling, you know, certain people didn't have the best interest of the team at heart? Did you see that? What do you make of that? Do you know what he's talking about there?
No, not in a. He's pointing at individuals or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I wouldn't have thought there was anyone in the setup kind of with the team's best interest at heart.
Yeah.
You know, everyone wants to go out and win and play well, and you know, from what I saw, people were enjoying it. I know, obviously, not ideal when you're not winning, but people were enjoying the camps, even though they were crazy, ins and outs and ins and outs. So I couldn't have said, oh, it was him or it was him or it was him. I just don't know.
Yeah. You sound just like you're a little bit bemused by the whole thing, surprised by the whole thing.
Yeah, I suppose looking away, football never ceases to amaze the kind of the stuff that does go on.
Mm.
And kind of storm in a teacup type things. Just press for press sake at times as well, you know.
Yeah.
It was a nice, easy one for people who wanted to put the boot in on Kenny because, you know, the results hadn't been great and they probably felt that, you know, oh, this is another little kick down. Because, you know, I think towards the end of the Martin O'Neill kind of era, you know, there was a lot of stuff that kind of was held until the opportune moment and then unleashed on him.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, the video thing, I never thought we'd be talking about again. It's just, like I said, it's kind of cropped up this week as maybe one of the reasons Damien Duff has departed. But to be fair, we'll talk to Damien Duff or the FAI about that. It's not fair to put it all on you. The period under Kenny, generally, obviously, you've got some game time. Scoring a goal would just change a lot. You just feel like that's where it's at the moment. How have you found the experience? Because the COVID thing obviously looms large too. So off the field, on the field, give us your sense of how you found it being involved, Daryl.
Well, look, I suppose first and foremost, I'm probably very lucky to get back in the setup. If it wasn't for COVID, I probably wouldn't be back in it, you know. So I had that bit of luck and, you know, thankfully I was able to take the opportunity. But from the games themselves, you know, you could probably see the majority of games there's been a lot of good things. Just like you said, sticking the ball in the back of the net, we're creating, there's chances been created, there's some good stuff, but just not getting that last little bit. The last, the ball falls and someone's just in the right place at the right time, or you know, Robbie Brady's one against Bulgaria where it hits it so sweetly, smashes the bar.
Yeah.
You know, you just sometimes you don't have that bit of luck. But look, the manager's trying to change a lot, change the way Ireland play, and you can kind of see the progress in that. But you know, when it comes to getting wins, is all that really matters.
Yeah, and I guess then it's easy for critics because you can point to results, and it's very hard to argue with that. But if you watch the games, I've been really pleasantly surprised at how much has changed in terms of the approach. You know, you can really see the team playing in a very different way. And I presume preparation has been difficult with COVID, or like in terms of time on the training ground, it felt like you didn't really have a clean week at all, it seemed, certainly towards the back end of last year.
Yeah, you know, the training is limited on international duty anyway.
Yeah.
But with the three games, you know, so what, I think we didn't get on the Thursday. Like, you'd lads playing games on the Sunday, not coming in, not able to do anything Monday. That's rolling into Tuesday, Wednesday, and you're kind of only just getting a small bit of shape on Tuesday, and then you're preparing for the game Wednesday.
Mm.
So it's quite difficult, I'd say, for the manager, where if he's the way he's trying to implement what he wants. You know, you probably would love 2-3 weeks of a pre-season type thing, but you're getting 2-3 days. And there's just that many games, and it's not helped when you've had, what was it, 13 from the squad in October and 14 from the most recent one that had to be changed. You know, it's very, very difficult.
Yeah, no, incredibly difficult. And I think anybody who's been fair about it will acknowledge that. So, look, I guess our time is coming to a close here. Hopefully everybody pitches up in good health for the World Cup qualifiers, and you get a good run of form with Wickham, and we see you come March time. Daryl, thanks a million. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks very much. Take it easy now.
Keep it going.
Look after yourself, all right?
Cheers.
Thank you.
Daryl Horgan there of Wickham and the Republic of Ireland.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.